denied. You're checking out Breakfast Soup Raw.
Enjoy as Dontoni and Mish spill the soup about pro wrestling, sports, news, and pop culture. Breakfast Soup Raw.
Breakfast Soup Raw.
And now, your host, Mish and Dontoni.
That summarizes tonight's Raw for me. I tell you, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's being on vacation for 5 days or not getting very good sleep yesterday night. But I don't know. Raw, it on paper, it should have been a lot better than what it was. When I break up individual parts of tonight's Raw, I thought there were some moments that were pretty damn good. But I don't know, for some reason, by the end of the show, I was just, I don't know, it just felt like something, you know, it just felt like scattered pieces all thrown on a show. It didn't feel like a good flow. Probably the thing I liked the most was Edge and The Miz going back and forth. And, for anybody out there that's trying to play off that they were overly scripted, Edge and Miz are veterans. They are great on the mic. They are given bullet points. They know what they're allowed to say and not allowed to say. But people think that Edge is going to get in trouble for kind of mentioning the other show. Where have you all been? Mish and I have been saying it, going back to Nia Jax and Charlotte Flair. You know, trying to be a little bit more on the reality side. Damian Priest mentioning podcasts. Becky Lynch talking about dirt sheets. Don't you see a little pattern, everyone? WWE is trying to use reality in suspension of disbelief. They're using belief in suspension of disbelief. It's not a hard formula to figure out. I think some people intentionally act dumb. But what'd you think about tonight's Raw, Mish?
It was all right. It was all right. It was, of course, I was really happy to see Miz and Maurice back. Edge coming back had a little bit of fire. He was playing the fiddle a little, or the violin a little too much for me tonight. It wasn't regular Edge, but it was what it was. You're never going to find me shitting ever on AJ and Omos. You're not going to find me shitting on Orton and fucking Riddle. Those guys are literally the cornerstones of Raw. Like, they're what I look forward to. Damian Priest, I am already starting to see a trickle of people that are not really digging the triggered Damian Priest, but I still like Damian Priest.
The Incredible Hulk, as I've called him the last couple of weeks. People thought I was ridiculous when I said that, like 3-4 weeks ago. He's the Incredible Hulk. He is El Incredible. El Incredible. Is that how you say it in Espanol? El Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Incredible Hulk. Say it in Spanish. Los Hulkos. That's what it is. He legitimately is like a Latin David Banner. Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like it when I'm angry. Come on. Anybody that remembers the 70s with David Banner? And we joked about it last week. You imagine 2021 David Banner. David, how you wearing a shirt like that in 2021? That's so 70s. David, when are you going to find a girlfriend? David, when are you going to get married? David, your breath smells. David. I mean, that's literally Damian Priest. David Banner would be like, "Oh, that's Damian Priest is the fucking Incredible Hulk. He's David Banner. He's David Banner."
Cool. I don't know. If I look at him like that, I mean, that's kind of a wild explanation of it. I just figured that they're trying to focus more on the fact that Damian Priest isn't this calm collect, which, I don't know if I'm a fan of either. Because, if you look back at the last year that he's been around, he's been this real cool, calm, collected guy. And now they have him in this weird pseudo gimmick where he's the triggered guy and he loses his shit over nothing. And it's kind of weird considering he did a good job as cool, calm, collected guy. Doesn't get phased, laughs at promos. You know what I mean? Like, and all of a sudden you just decided to flip it after the draft? I don't know.
Well, I don't have his record in front of me. But if you look at Damian Priest's record in 2021, now, I'm not exact here, but I'm not off that far off either. He must be about 45-3. I'm not kidding. He's probably 45-50 wins and maybe 3 or 4 losses. That's it. I mean, I know everybody talks about 50-50 booking, but Damian Priest, it's not even close. He has the most impressive 2021 record in wrestling, other than AEW, because they can't have them, you know, their big signings lose any matches. You know, right, Mystery Man, right. Welcome to the family, Mystery Man, and welcome all of you to tonight's edition of Breakfast Soup Raw. I am Don Tony, and he is
Anthony Missionary Thomas.
What's up?
What's going on?
How's your Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I was going to say, how was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a good weekend? You know, I know you went out for a little bit. Obviously, you went on your trip.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people caught a little bit of the escapades earlier in the week, because I know that you did a show yesterday as well. But how was it? How was your whole weekend?
It was relaxing. Went way too fast. Yeah. I didn't get to do a lot of the social things that I wanted to do, but I did have some rest and relaxation. And got to spend it with the future misses. And since we came home a little bit earlier yesterday than expected, I ended up doing an impromptu episode of the Sit Down last night, and it was a lot of fun. Some great calls, great topics of discussion. And you know, if anybody out there has not checked it out yet, go check it out. It was a real fun show. Tonight we're obviously gonna recap Raw quickly, get into some wrestling tidbits, some news. We will set off the bullshit alarm. Should we set it off right at the beginning? Woo! Should we just throw it out there?
I mean, if you want to roll that way, that's fine. Okay. You got a few things there.
All right, let's just throw this out there. I see. Now, I wasn't online that much in the 5 days, but coming home, since I was on the ferry for 90 minutes, I was able to you know, spent a lot of time responding to comments. But I saw that Ric Flair gave a Thanksgiving present to a lot of tweet bangers out there. You know what was funny? I watched in the last 24 hours, just checking, I watched website after website after website after website after website cover this ridiculously dumb, stupid, fake claim by Ric Flair that he was offered $100,000 to wrestle Sammy Guevara in Israel. Much love to my Israeli listeners and friends out there. Nir's not the only one, but yeah, we got the 411 on that one. And before I even tell you what it is, for all of you out there that watched podcasters, bloggers, websites, all cover this story, take note that not one of them bothered to ask the actual promoter if this was true. I know this is going to sound kind of messed up, but it probably doesn't for my friends in Israel. But it's not like the United States where you have 50 different promotions out there. For all of you out there that watch people actually buy this shit, I'm going to give you two words right now that if you think it's true, the two words I give you will give you that answer. And the name is Jerry Royf. Hopefully I pronounced his name right. First name spelled G-E-R-Y, last name spelled R-O-I-F. He is the promoter of IPWA. It is the Israeli Pro Wrestling Association. I believe it's been around since 2001. And that promotion is the promotion that has had Darby Allin recently, Badass Billy Gunn, I think Sammy Guevara for a show. And let me just say it like this. that promoter was interested in having legends come to his Fed. The thing is that that promoter did not offer Ric Flair $100,000 to wrestle Sammy Guevara. It is an absolute lie. That promotion draws anywhere from 30 to about 150 on average. One show drew over 300. In fact, Jay Lethal was supposed to defend the Ring of Honor Heavyweight Championship at one of those shows in Israel, but Jay Lethal lost the title right before the event, and the promoter didn't have the fundage to book a impromptu flight to actually fly their current, at the time, Ring of Honor Heavyweight Champion to defend that title in Israel. That is a lie. It is bullshit. And not one website, not one journalist, not one podcast, not one person out there bothered to even check with the promoter, the Fed, or do a little research, hashtag, do I want to be first or do I want to be right? No, they just wanted a conversation piece to basically jerk you all off. It is not a true story. Ric Flair is being Ric Flair. And Ric Flair gave a lot of goofs out there a Thanksgiving present. People actually buying that story, which was a lie. Sorry to ruin a lot of fun, but that is the truth.
Do you think it was just a blatant lie, or do you think Ric Flair was hoping that the promoter would actually call him up and offer him $100,000?
That promoter would not even be able to offer him $10,000. And not only that, when the promoter was looking for some legends to appear at his promotion a couple of years ago, Ric Flair's name was one of those names, but there was never any money mentioned. There was nothing. That is Ric Flair. Basically, what Ric Flair did was he twisted the story. Ric Flair, you want me to come to Israel? You want me to? I'll wrestle Sammy Guevara. Give me $100,000. Promoter did not offer Ric Flair $100,000. That's why Ric Flair won't name drop Jerry Royf's name. Hopefully I'm pronouncing the name right. That's why he won't even name drop the name of the promotion. Because by him just saying, oh, this promoter in Israel, like there's 20 of them, you know, oh, this promoter in Israel offered me $100,000. You think anybody would say, who's the promoter? Who's the promoter? Nobody did. They just let Ric Flair be Ric Flair, as Tommy Dreamer would say. Oh, it's just Rick being Rick. No, man, sorry. I am a fan of Ric Flair. I don't think the plane ride from hell should be held against him anymore. You know, it is what it is. It's, you know, we don't know the full truth, but
that was bullshit.
I can't believe we even had to cover it. But it was bullshit, everybody. So much for me to not curse on tonight's show. But we just got that out of the way. So anybody that continues to still bring up that story is just looking for this. So it's a lie. It's a flat out lie. So should we get back to Raw? Should we talk about Nia Jax? Should we talk about some frustration within NXT?
What would you like to discuss first? Man. I mean, I was going to ask you quick, have you checked out Woo Nation at all?
Woo Nation? No, why would I check it out?
Oh, I wasn't sure if you checked out Ric Flair's show. He's him and Mark Madden. It's interesting, some of the things that he says. He brought up, you know, the reality of the discrepancies between Becky and Charlotte. He talked about how the reasons why he left WWE. He talked a little bit about the belt. He talked about how WWE apparently are trying to steal his legacy from him. I mean, it's kind of out there.
Why? Because they remove Woo at the beginning of the Raw and SmackDown intro.
Oh, he's melted down about that, dude. He melted down. He's like, how could you replace me with the Ultimate Warrior, a guy who held up WWE for money and caused them problems? And I'm thinking, damn, Rick, little pot kettle black going on there, sir. You know, it's interesting though. And you know what? Look, and I've never really given Mark Madden like major, you know, brownie points over the years and stuff like that. But some of the things that Rick says and does, you can tell the professionalism in Mark Madden yes. for being able to reel him in.
Yes, and that's why
Ric Flair's a character,
yeah.
and Mark Madden is clearly a professional broadcaster, not just a podcaster or vlogger or whatever, but an actual broadcaster, and he knows how to direct the interview and direct the questioning in order to get Rick away from some of his darker motifs, you know? So, yeah. I don't know, I just wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, no, like, props to Mark Madden, absolutely. People are looking for
a controversial show, too, because... Because, I mean, people could talk about Jim Cornette, and they know that the Jim Cornette show is often controversial. You could even go with Conan's show, can be very controversial, very opinionated. And, of course, a lot of our friends directly, you know, are very opinionated, too. But I thought, you know what, for a lot of people that would never have known or even asked, check out the first couple episodes of Woo Nation. Make your own opinion. But okay. It's interesting.
All right. I see a lot of our friends are talking about Raw tonight, so let's recap sure. Raw pretty quick. I think
let's recap.
You know, look, Miz and Maurice return, and if anybody checked out the preview for tonight's show here or saw my Twitter account, soon as I saw Miz returning with Maurice, with her in full outfit in the ring with the Miz, who was right. confronting Edge, I immediately said, aha, are we going to get Miz and Maurice versus Edge and Beth Phoenix? I think that is on the horizon. You do not reintroduce Maurice in full gear in the ring, and I'm not trying to say this to be sexist, while the men verbally fight it out. Her being there, I think, is a telltale sign we will see Beth Phoenix and Edge taking on Miz and Maurice. And Rojo okay Bear, like minds, think alike.
Maurice is an old, you know, she's a vet at this point in her own way. I mean, I know it's a weird thing to say about Maurice, but she's been around in WWE for a minute. So is Beth, you know, I mean. And look, it makes sense to have couples versus couples. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. Miz cuts some of his better promos in his career when he has somebody there with him. More specifically, John Morrison, and even more specifically than that, Maurice. So even tonight, when he first started up, I mean, before he started interacting with Edge, when he first came out there and he was just rattling off, he was absolutely on fire, and that's because his wife is there. There's just something about her being not literally in his corner, but maybe partially so. But him having her at his side makes him a better performer, makes him a better promo guy. He just has more confidence when he comes out there. And overall, the entire exchange between Edge and Miz was fine. There was nothing inherently wrong with it, you know, and it set up, you know, obviously the match that we're eventually going to see, you know, how dare Edge not put Miz on his list, which I thought was also kind of funny, you know, of opponents that he wants to face, even though he put Finn Balor on there, like he hadn't wrestled Finn Balor not that long ago, but I digress. So yeah, it was all right. It was a setup, and yeah, I can easily see Beth getting involved with this. So
yep.
It is what it is.
And, you know, obviously for those that are under a rock, MJF and CM Punk, you know, had their big verbal exchange last week, which was awesome because 2 weeks ago on our pilot episode of the sit down, we, at that time, on that episode, we had a lengthy discussion. Who should CM Punk feud with next? And the topic that we talked about was MJF. That was a right. week before they had that little, you know, nonverbal confrontation at ringside. So it was awesome sure. to see it actually happen. But, you know, look, you know, everyone out there, you know, I know AEW does name drop WWE here and there. And as I said yesterday, I had no issue with it whatsoever in their exchange. And, you know, Edge indirectly saying, you know, that other places, I think his exact quote was, you got people on other shows saying your name to get a cheap reaction. You live rent-free in a lot of heads. Yeah, you could kind of say, oh, maybe he's talking about Dancing with the Stars. No, he was talking about AEW. But so what? Because it makes sense to bring up something like that. I think
it makes sense to bring up something popular, you know?
Yeah, I mean
let's be honest. During that entire promo exchange, the biggest pops of that promo were when they mentioned The Miz and they mentioned John Cena. So,
yeah. I mean look.
That just speaks worlds to me. Well, so.
As I said yesterday, you know, when The Miz's whole career has been in WWE, and a lot of people have made the comparisons of Miz and MJF, and I think it's probably more because of the physical size of the two, but, you know, obviously the promos, not the same, but, you know, still. I mean, I could understand why people would put both of those names in the same sentence.
No. That's a fair thing to say. I can absolutely see the similarities between The Miz and MJF. I mean, first off, three letters in their name, both start with M. That's a good start right there. You know, both around the same height. You know, I mean, one's married to a Playboy centerfold. The other one, I mean, so, I mean, there's some similarities there. I understand, DT.
So, you know, so obviously if CM Punk is going to rip on MJF, if that is, you know, such a comparison, you know, it's unavoidable. And, you know, to use a little reality, it's fine. The difference with WWE is, you know, they probably, you know, 9 times out of 10 would not mention the actual promotion, but may indirectly say it. Back when we would have the Monday Night Wars, you know, you would have, when WCW didn't name drop WWF, they would say the people up north.
Right.
Or they would say the people down south on the flip side of it. I mean, there were phrases that were done. But, you know, people losing their shit. Even Liv Morgan tonight, when Liv Morgan had her exchange with Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan said that your bloated contract is the reason why my friends are no longer here. Now, let's dissect this a little bit, everybody. WWE has got record profits. No, Becky Lynch's contract has nothing to do with Ruby Riott being let go. You know, what was the other young lady's name? I'm drawing a blank right now. The other member of the Riott Squad. We had Liv Morgan, we had Ruby Riott, and we had...
Oh, and the Viking girl, the Viking hillbilly.
Chat room, bail me out on this one. What was her name again? I'm going to end up going through the alphabet. Sarah Logan. Thank you, Joe Punches. Sarah Logan.
Yes, Sarah
That's
Logan.
Not true. Becky Lynch's contract had nothing, but it sounds good for TV. You know, when Edge and talking about Miz, and it sounds good on TV. Yes. If it sounds good on TV, mission accomplished. But, you know, people that are, put it this way, if you are nonstop talking about it, or that's the first thing you go to talking about tonight's Raw, WWE did exactly what they wanted you to do, talk about the show. So having those references, but the thing I find funny is you can't have it on both sides. If AEW is going to name drop here and there, directly or indirectly, then you can't say, oh, WWE is copying AEW. No, this is something that we've talked about for a couple of months now. WWE is trying to act more aware of their surroundings.
That WWE is copying AEW because AEW mentioned WWE superstars? Like, does anybody not see the logic fail with that one? I don't know.
Yeah,
Never mind.
Hey, it sounds good on TV. It looks good on TV. And look, this is the reason why with Charlotte and Becky, or Becky and Liv, or Miz and Edge, when you feel that there's reality, we've talked about this many times over the years, when you could actually interject reality, real ingredients that are real, that are not all character-driven or storyline-driven, when you actually add some real ingredients to it, it gives people a suspension of disbelief that is, there's some real life tension there. So they're trying to create this tension with Liv Morgan and Becky Lynch that, oh, you're a bully. Where we've heard that before. Oh, my friends are gone because your bloated contract. Trying to create friction, the perception of friction using reality. Ric Flair trying to add, although he was not asked to do it, trying to add onto the friction between Becky and Charlotte. No need, Rick, but he had to interject himself in there because the guy loves wrestling, because the guy wants to be a part of it. The guy wants to be around it. And obviously, you know, social media, which is, did you ever think this, Mish, that social media, for the most part, was going to be Ric Flair's biggest attachment to wrestling in his final years?
Actually, of course. Ric Flair is a guy who constantly needs a voice. And since he's not really in a position to go out on TV every week and deliver that voice, he still needs that attention. You don't exist as one of the biggest people, one of the most iconic names in the history of wrestling, and just fade away. Mm-hmm. You still need that attention. Good or bad, you still need that attention. So the fact that Ric Flair is now attached to social media, he's now doing a new show, it's just another avenue for him to outlet, for him to actually speak, for him to feel like wrestling has not forgotten about him, that wrestling still needs him. You know, I think one of the most detrimental things that's going to happen to Rick is when he realizes how lonely he is without WWE. And I don't know if there's an AEW thing on the way. He did talk about, you know, having discussions with Tony Khan on the podcast. Once again, how real is that? How deep does that conversation go? We don't know. He didn't really let anything on. But let's say Tony Khan doesn't pick him up. Let's say NWA doesn't pick him up. Let's say, you know, Ric Flair doesn't go to any promotion and have any kind of a figurehead weight there. I mean, all that's left for him is doing his show with Mark Madden and going on social media and going through different tirades. It's I don't want to say it's a drug, but I imagine that there's definitely withdrawals. You need that love. When you're Ric Flair, you need that attachment to the fans. And I mean, without sounding dark, you know, Rick is coming up in the time of his life where, you know, he's trying to make everything right, or should be thinking about trying to make things right with people.
There's an old saying that I've gone to over the last couple of decades, and it's so true, and it's happening again. A lot of famous people want to say hello when it's time to say goodbye. When they're in the prime of their careers or they're young, you know, how many of you out there tried to get, you know, a little attention to a wrestler, female or male, that you really enjoy or really look up to or really follow? You know, and 99 out of 100 times, maybe even 999 out of 1,000 times, maybe even 9,999 out of 10,000 times, you are ignored, not acknowledged, not a thank you, nothing. And a lot of people, when they get older, once it's time to say goodbye, now they want to say hello. And that seems to be happening with Ric Flair. So, but Liv Morgan tonight pushing that tension with Becky Lynch. They're having the title match next week. They're not waiting until day one. Now, yes, there could be a rematch at day one, but they are going on the fast track. We had the contract signing tonight. They are going to face each other next week, and to kind of set it up a little bit, Becky sets up something with Sonya before the show, and to have a little bit of interaction tonight, they were going to have Team Liv versus Team Bex 5-on-5, and it was Liv Morgan, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Nikki Ash, and Dana Brooke. They beat Becky Lynch, Tamina, Carmella, Doudrop, and Queen Zelina. I think it was Liv Morgan pinning Tamina.
Yes, one it was.
The two things that I got out of this match. It was a fun match. The women worked great. And I'm not crapping on the match at all. The one thing that I couldn't escape from that match is I found it hilarious that not one woman decided to try to go after Dana Brooke after the match was over. She's 24/7 champion.
Right.
I mean, nothing. Not one person tried to go after Dana Brooke for that 24/7 title. That was the thing that, you know, I thought maybe, of more than anything
maybe
else.
Maybe they don't want the belt. Maybe it's just a belt.
Yeah, maybe that could be it. No, I don't want
that. That match was okay. I did like the fact that Rhea is such a weird girl. So everybody in the ring, she handles with kid gloves. By the time she got to Doudrop, she was lacing them in there. I don't know. I mean, those girls obviously worked in NXT UK together and stuff like that, but it was interesting. It was interesting to watch that. Like, she felt comfortable enough to really pound the hell out of Doudrop's back. I was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
They look like they're having fun.
Yeah, those two work okay together. There's a program somebody should take a look at, bringing those two together, you know, in something. Sure. Having Watch Me tattooed on your ass, I don't know, man. I mean, they're trying to make, you know, Liv look serious or something. You know, she has this almost like pseudo-goth serious girl, you know. But she has Watch Me on her ass. Explain that. Explain that to me, how wardrobe. It's stupid. It really betrays the character. It's like if you want a Damian Priest to go out there and be this serious killer, but then you make him dress up like a KFC chicken. You know, it was just, I don't know. I get it. I know what they're appealing to. It's just living it, man.
Well, that's sorry. The thing.
She's a really weak wrestler. She's a weak promo. That promo tonight was awful.
I thought it was
awful. You know what?
Everybody was all Becky.
Becky was the only person emoting in that entire promo. Like, Becky literally had to jump at her in order to get any kind of response. The entire time is like, Liv is like, and then, yeah, I'm passionate too, but you were crying last week. I'm like, oh my God, shut up. Yeah. Shut up.
I don't know. I thought she did okay. Look, I said this.
Have we set the bar this low?
No. I said this
low where Liv is a good promo.
No, I never said she was a good promo. What I'm saying is just what I said a month ago. I like Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan has definitely improved I didn't even realize it was up there still. Liv Morgan has improved a decent amount over the last year or so. I do not believe.
Yeah, improving doesn't mean you're good, though.
A lot of people wanted her to win Money in the Bank. I even said, what's the rush? Maybe she wins the briefcase next year, 2022. I said, what's the rush? A lot of people wanted her to win that briefcase. And what I said is, Liv Morgan is developing. She's better than she was a year ago. She's not ready to be a women's champion yet. This is going to be the biggest step that she is taking on the path of becoming a women's champion. She is being tested right now to see where she's at on the food chain. She is not ready to beat Becky Lynch yet. She's not going to beat Becky Lynch next week. She's not going to beat Becky Lynch at day one. I think what this is doing right now is just testing the waters to see how she does. I think she is doing a good job right now, not championship material, but good enough to show that there is progress. This time next year, you know, maybe I'll think, okay, I think she's ready. But I think right now this is more of a test than anything else. So I agree with you. She's definitely not ready to be a women's champion, but she's on her way. Maybe if she could team up with someone else, you know, and I'm not trying to diminish the women's tag titles, but, you know, we see how far down that women tag team division is gone. If she won the tag team titles with another partner, I don't think anybody would really have any objection to it. But as far as a singular title, I don't think she's ready. So that's how I feel about it. Now, we should mention two things tonight. Number one, congratulations to Randy Orton. And believe it or not, I feel bad a little bit for Natalya, because she was left out of all this conversation. And something tells me at Survivor Series, WWE may not have even realized it at the time. Because if they did and didn't mention it, man, that's, you know, sad for Natalya. We talked about it last week, that with Randy Orton's match at Survivor Series, that was his 177th, I believe, pay-per-view appearance for WWE. Breaks the record. We found out that Natalya also broke the record of pay-per-view appearances for WWE. So Randy Orton not only holds the record now by himself, but Natalya holds the record on the women's side. And get this, Mish, the Guinness Book of World Records today posted this gigantic article about Randy Orton and Natalya. I mean, look, I'm happy for both of them, but is that something that the Guinness Book of World Records should be talking about?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
So they carry all sorts of silly records. I mean, person who snores the loudest, longest broadcast on podcasting. Like, I mean, look, if there's a record to be broken, if there's something to measure, absolutely the Guinness's Book of World, the Guinness Book of World Records should absolutely cover it. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
Yeah, cover all the records. Any stupid, inane thing to things that actually matter. You know, it matters to someone. It matters to some people. And for wrestling fans, it might be one of those little factoids that they enjoy seeing in the book.
Well, we could add another record tonight. I'm shocked that nobody talked about it. Nobody. Randy Orton tonight, with his match on Raw, he now holds the record of the most matches on WWE Raw. History. Past Kane.
Yeah.
Wow. He mentioned it in a tweet about a week and a half ago. But, you know, I'm a little surprised that WWE didn't make mention of it tonight. And I'm surprised that I didn't see any buzz about it tonight at all. Randy Orton tonight holds the record. Randy Orton did not wrestle last week. So Randy Orton technically did not break the record last week. He broke it tonight. So, you know, I was a little surprised that even social media, I didn't see anybody talking about it tonight. But congrats. Congrats to Randy Orton. That's a pretty big feat, man. Pretty big feat. And he still has several years left in the tank.
Yeah.
So good for him. Good for him. Tonight, him and Riddle beating Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. Yeah. I know most of us remember this. When Goldust put the wig on Bill Goldberg, and, you know, you don't do that to Goldberg at the time. That, to me, was one of the most dopiest things that they ever did on WWE television. But tonight, Riddle, since he dressed up like Randy last week, Riddle wants Randy to look like Riddle. And, as quickly as he put the wig on Randy Orton, Randy's like, get that crap off of my head. But they beat Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode tonight. And I'll be honest with you. I like Roode and Ziggler, but this just feels like it is going nowhere.
I mean, Roode and Ziggler are a fine team together, but they really don't have any legs. And I mean, when you're putting them up against RK-Bro, it's like they're out of here. Like, those guys are just so big right now. That entire audience was going banana. Absolutely crazy to see Randy Orton and Riddle out there tonight. Like, they were just nuts, and you could see their reaction. You could hear it. You could almost feel it through the TV set. They are huge. Huge together. And while I know you just put up the thing about Goldberg wearing the wig, I think with Riddle and Orton, it's a little more forgivable because Riddle is clearly the comedic effect character and Orton is the very serious one. So it kind of has a friendly dynamic. And because both of these guys are doing so well together, they, from promos to in-ring, I think there's a lot more forgiveness there as opposed to, oh my God, can you believe what they did to Randy Orton? I don't have that feeling at all. I think people laughed in the audience. They were genuinely amused by it. And even Riddle removing that wig as fast as he did with like lightning quickness,
big mistake.
I think only added to the
I mean
the funny of it.
Goldust at the time was very lighthearted, humorous as well, but you know it just it hurt Goldberg at the time. This did not hurt Randy in any way tonight.
No, I don't think so.
Fun match, you know. Look, I mean, if you watch RK-Bro against AJ Styles and Omos, other than Omos's unique offense because of his size, these matches feel very repetitive. I mean, I don't think there was anything tonight. I mean, you know, a couple of reversals, you know, Ziggler reversing, you know, blocking the RKO and hitting the zigzag. I think a lot of people are like, oh my God, they may actually win this. Yeah. They ain't taking the titles off of RK-Bro right now. And I'm going to stick with what I said last week. You know, everybody thinks that eventually Randy Orton is going to turn on Riddle. And I say, oh, you know, I'm going to go a different direction. What if it ends up being Riddle who turns on Randy Orton?
Man, I'm not looking forward to that. These guys are so much fun right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's in. I mean, obviously, eventually people can see that that's in the cards. I just hope it's not one of those cases like they. That WWE even did with the Shield, where they broke them up way too early. Yeah. I think right now they're on top. They're obviously one of the biggest moments of watching Raw. They're definitely the most talked about. So, yeah, I don't look forward to them splitting them up just yet. I really am not. I really enjoy this train ride, and I think there's a lot more they can do with it.
Absolutely.
You know,
so. Now, one of the big stories coming out of Raw tonight was early on, Seth Rollins comes out, cuts a promo, you know, basically saying, you know, no one person could take him out. Nobody could take him out. You know, a little indirect shot at that nut job last week, you know, that jumped Rollins. They announced that Rollins is going to be taking on Big E at Day One. And tonight we have a match between Kevin Owens and Big E. Kevin Owens tells Seth Rollins that even though tonight's non-title, if Kevin Owens beats Big E, Kevin Owens is added to the match. Now, if anybody followed Breakfast Soup Raw last week and a week before, we said a couple of times they are going to Big E versus Rollins versus Owens. Rollins to get over Big E more as far as the talent goes, and Kevin Owens more in the babyface department for Big E. So
yeah,
that was the setup tonight. Now, Rollins was pissed off at Kevin Owens because Rollins has the match at Day One all for himself. So early on, Rollins goes to Adam Pearce, and Adam Pearce tells Rollins, I never told Kevin Owens that he's in the match at Day One, if you know. And then Sonya comes over, and Sonya's like, you know, that's not a bad idea. So they end up liking the idea. So if Kevin Owens wins tonight, he's added to the match. Well, obviously WWE is too predictable at times. And I think a lot of us, when Seth Rollins was going to be at ringside for their main event match tonight with Kevin Owens and Big E, that Rollins was going to become a factor. Now, you could look at other matches where somebody's doing commentary, whether it's Sasha or Charlotte or Becky or someone else, somebody gets pushed into said wrestler at announcer's table, a little bit of fisticuffs go down. So what ends up happening? Kevin Owens provokes a little fighting with Seth Rollins. This leads to Seth Rollins getting involved in a match, Seth Rollins causing the disqualification. Kevin Owens beats Big E by DQ, which now means it is a three-way at Day One. Very predictable, but I absolutely like the three-way hell of a lot more than a one-on-one, because we know Seth and Kevin Owens could tear it up. And I think you take a little bit of the focus off of Big E a little bit. But what did you think of the overall setting that being set up tonight and how it came off?
The seeds have been placed for a little bit. I mean, we're just piggybacking off the whole, you know, KO was lying to Big E and he really wasn't. And Seth said he was a liar and you could trust Seth because he openly admits to being a liar. And, you know, you're right. It was predictable to see the three-way coming up on day one. And that makes sense. But as far as the storyline goes, I mean, it's something that they're committed to, you know, so this is the direction of it. I did enjoy Big E actually kind of relaxing a little bit tonight. Making fun of the interviewer, you know, wiping his mouth and stuff like that. I thought it was kind of funny. And he seemed to be in good spirits, which Big E as of late has kind of come off a little deflated lately. I mean, you know, going into Survivor Series with Roman Reigns and everything else like that. I don't mind his serious nature when it comes time to compete. But overall, we don't want Big E to change who he is. I mean, Big E has a boisterous, fun personality. Don't take that away from him. That's what makes people like him. That's what was likable about him being in New Day. That's what made all three of those guys likable. It's like when you start changing the direction, especially now that he's champion, it's not going to fare well with the fans that have been supporting Big E for the longest time. So I was kind of happy he reeled it back in tonight. He was a little bit more of his old self. You know, Seth and KO's little back and forth tonight was interesting because it wasn't just the atypical let's come to blows because I am Kevin Owens and you're Seth Rollins. So they had a little discourse there. Kevin Owens playing a little mind games with Seth, you know, and Seth obviously being over dramatic guy, doing over dramatic things to the point where obviously it was Seth's fault in the end anyways, to kind of get Kevin and Owens involved in this match for his interference. So, yes, was it easy to figure out that this was the direction? Yes. Is it the most horrible thing? No, not at all. No. And I'm okay with it because it's one thing that they don't do. One thing that modern WWE has a problem with is continuity.
Yeah.
And whether you like the storyline or not, at least they're adhering to it.
They're not taking the belt. For everybody that's saying take the belt off of Big E ASAP, they're not doing that. They're not doing that because you're going to have all the usual suspects online, big block letters, Big E failed experiment or disaster or, you know, just – and WWE after all
this – Can we at least give him a few months? I mean, gosh, so soon.
Yeah.
People are just so ready to just label something a failure after one and done. And it's like, I mean, this guy's been giving us years and years of entertainment, DT. Can we at least back his horse for longer than 3 months, 4 months? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear. I don't know, dude. Now, we had another running segment all throughout the show tonight. Vince McMahon and Austin Theory. After all these years, Vince finally gets to slap in Austin. Now Vince could be at rest. He could take it easy. I slapped Austin. Austin, I slapped you. Just not that Austin. Austin Theory is almost like mentoring Austin Theory throughout the night. They're in Vince's office. They're basically watching Raw, and Austin Theory's giving his input. Vince is giving his input. And this leads to the very end where, you know, Austin Theory, did you learn anything tonight? Yes, you know, expect the unexpected. And this leads to Vince McMahon unexpectedly slapping Austin Theory in the face. Nice hard slap. Austin, sure. You still have a lot to learn. What I got out of this is that there's been rumors that Adam Pearce is going to have some people surrounding him. I wonder if Austin Theory in some way is either going to interact in, you know, with Adam Pearce or something behind the scenes, or if Vince McMahon is going to give somebody to Austin Theory. You know, it just feels like Austin Theory may end up being not necessarily a stooge, but I'm starting to think Austin Theory may have something to do in a bigger picture And it, maybe it has in a some way with Adam Pearce. What do you think?
I mean, I made a little comment online, but I thought it was kind of interesting that Austin Theory is the first guy that Vince has taken under his wing in years. I said since when? Since Mr. Kennedy, people brought up Hornswoggle. Those were back in 2007. Drew was the last one that Vince really, you know, took a shining to. That was in 2008. So it's been a long time since Vince McMahon has ever been directly invested in another guy's career. Now, with that said, I like Austin. I like Austin Theory. I think that he's definitely a young blue chipper. I can definitely see shades of a Randy Orton, a young Randall Keith Orton type push. Not saying that he's going to come out there with the arm thing, but at the same time, I wouldn't doubt that this guy gets a little bit more TV time now because of this interesting movement with Vince. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the direction that they're going to go with it is. Clearly, he's important. Clearly, the company is making you understand that we're dusting off Vince McMahon to try and get this kid over. So they definitely have plans for him. I'm not exactly sure where they're going to go, though.
What would you technically say that maybe Vince McMahon indirectly, even though it was the authority, that maybe Seth Rollins got that favoritism because they had the authority with them, and Vince, you know, although not on TV.
No, because it was more Triple H.
Yeah, Seth, well, that's what I'm saying. Even though that was more Triple H and Stephanie and, you know, the Stooges, but, you know, Seth Rollins was technically kind of the chosen one.
Yeah, but not on the Vince level. Like, you can say that via storyline, but not TV time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally giving Austin how many cuts since the stupid egg to tonight. He had what, three different clips with Vince tonight too? So I mean, that's a lot. And this was probably all pre-taped on Sunday anyways. It doesn't bother me.
That's true. That is very true. A lot of it was, could have been pre-taped. By the way, you know, we got hundreds tuning in and not too many likes in the like department. We would very much appreciate it if you are enjoying the show right now that you could take 3 seconds of your time. Not count 1, 2, 3 and tap out, but hit that like button. I want to see that go into triple digits in the next minute or two. And I really mean that. I mean, it helps a lot. I mean, it just lets YouTube know with that algorithm that you're enjoying the show and you recommend it to others. So smash that like button and thank you.
Thank you.
So we also had tonight a little bit more comedy. AJ Styles, allegedly blind from last week's incident with the Street Profits, as he called them, those smoke enthusiasts. We have the Street Profits beating Alpha Academy today, AJ Styles and Omos. You know, AJ Moore trying to get involved and it backfires. Where do you see this going?
Oh, I don't. I mean, obviously, we're going to see a match at day one. I mean, that's what it is. We're going to see that match at day one. I enjoyed AJ's antics. I was very surprised he didn't have the cane. Maybe that would have been a little too insensitive of AJ to have the cane. But, yeah, now him coming out there blind, almost redirecting him during the promo. I was laughing. I thought that was funny. Like, AJ's pointing over here and almost is like, I'm over here. You know, like, I don't know. Those two guys, that there's the other two guys, you know, young guy and veteran. It works. They just work really well together, you know. The smoke squad, isn't that what they called? Yeah, the smoke enthusiasts.
Smoke enthusiasts.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a match at day one. I don't see anything big coming out of it. It's going to be another comedic effect match. Especially after the whole pizza debacle. You know what I mean?
Don't remind me. Shout out to Rojo Bear. Happy 10-month anniversary being a channel member, my friend. 10 months flies by.
Oh, thank you, Rojo.
Yeah.
Rojo.
The whole thing with the pizza and Survivor Series, I mean,
right?
It just feels like the Street Profits are also stuck in the mud as well. And
yes,
you know, it just feels like Alpha Academy is stuck in the mud. It feels like AJ Styles and Omos are stuck in the mud. It feels like the Street Profits are stuck in the mud. It feels like Roode and Ziggler are stuck in the mud. And guess what? I think even though the fans, it doesn't matter right now because they're that over still, I think Randy Orton and Riddle are getting stuck in the mud because, you know, the backstage stuff every week, dressing up, why don't you dress up like this and this, and it's enjoyable, and I'm not poo-pooing on it. But it just feels like almost every tag team on Raw right now is stuck in the mud. Speedy, welcome to the family, Speedy.
I think the big problem is we know who we want to see against Orton and Riddle, and it's AJ and Omos. But we can't do them for 10 months straight. You know what I mean? Like, the only people on the same level as Orton and Riddle are AJ and Omos. That's it. I mean, the Usos did very well. You know what I mean? In that scenario. And I'd like to see the Usos get mixed up in there, but obviously they're on SmackDown and stuff like that. As far as the other tag teams on Raw, I don't look at RK-Bro as being stuck more than I look at there's no competition for them other than one real
team. That's what makes them stuck.
I know, but they can still go out there and do things. They can still
right. Well, that's promos. What I'm saying. It's not to you the point where antics.
You can have the Rock and Mankind levels, and maybe that's unfair to say, but I mean, in a modern version, you can have that Rock and Mankind level of entertainment and have your squash matches with, I don't know, Billy Gunn and Chuck Palumbo or something. The variant of Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler, you know, like they're just there to give them the opportunity to have a good match. As far as Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler go, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Unless WWE comes out with new tag teams or comes out with, you know, I don't know, another tandem tag team out of nowhere, that we know where this division belongs, and it just belongs to four men. So. Well.
Two more tag teams that I think we could say are kind of stuck in the mud. The Mysterios beating the Hurt Business, Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin tonight. And that just felt like filler more than anything else.
Yeah. And, Hurt Business should be bigger. They really should. And I don't know what the plan is with that. Obviously, Bobby Lashley came out there with that odd promo tonight, too. The Hurt Business needs to reestablish themselves. I mean, once again, are they back together? Are they kind of back together? Are they kind of not back together? Like, there's this weird, unaired answer. Like, we just don't know. Because, I mean, they never even really went into fully explain. MVP never really fully explained why they came out and defended them. We don't know if they're back together. Like, there was a meeting and they all got, you know what I mean? Like, that's a continuity error. That's a WWE continuity error that can be fixed by having all four guys deliver a promo or have a segment where they explain what in the hell happened and where they stand. Because Hurt Business is, honestly, to be fair, is probably the only tag team that I could see competing with Orton and Riddle and AJ and Omos as a higher-end faction just because of their allegiance with Bobby Lashley.
The reason why I don't see that at all is because it just felt like WWE was doing nothing else with these guys, so they reformed the Hurt Business to satisfy an audience out there that was looking for it. But once they reformed them, it's like, all right, you know, they're reformed, but we're still going to have Shelton and Cedric pretty much on their own. That's why I don't think they're going to waste the time explaining it, because I don't think they are investing.
They got 3 hours.
I know, but
we're talking about a 30-second vignette.
Yeah, but creatively, if they're not investing that much time as the faction, and this is what I was going to ask you, were you left tonight thinking that WWE is going to turn Bobby Lashley into a babyface? Because that's what I felt coming out of
tonight. You're not the only one. You're not the only one that saw that, you know, and I guess that would be a good question. I don't know. I don't want Bobby Lashley as a babyface. I really don't. Bobby Lashley has found his stride as a heel with MVP. Those two have constantly delivered. They've given us good matches. They've given us good promos together. MVP was literally the MVP this year for carrying Bobby Lashley to a different level of turning Bobby Lashley savage. Like, all the nuances of Bobby Lashley before this with Lana and stuff like that was just all hokey, and it was bad. And it was almost like when the Hurt Business came along and MVP was the voice, it almost rebolstered all four of those guys' careers. Yeah. MVP did such a good job of making Bobby Lashley into this monster heel. It's like, are we already at the direction that they want to put him as a babyface?
Well, they don't have to have him. They don't have to have him kissing babies. He could still be the pissed off, you know, guy that he is. But instead, I mean,
it wasn't that long ago that he was beating the hell out of Bill Goldberg's
right.
Kid. Like,
but the fans, I think, were more behind Bobby Lashley with that. But basically, by doing this turn, it now has Bobby Lashley with a whole new crop of people that he could beat up. So he technically would not be a baby face, so to speak. Like, he would not be cutting promos like a baby face, but he would go after the heels. So it actually gives a little bit different crop of wrestlers. I could see him going after AJ Styles. I could see him possibly going after Omos. I could see him going after...
had that as a heel Bobby Lashley, though, too. Because the heel Bobby Lashley was against everyone.
Right.
The only thing that mattered was the Hurt Business.
Right, but WWE... So
it's like, why would you all of a sudden change his demeanor in order to try and fit these other storylines when you can present these storylines in the same character and, if anything, reestablish the character as being a savage?
Because
it doesn't make sense to me.
Because WWE is simple. They want to keep things simple. You know, I mean, it's that. That's why even with the smaller roster, you know every week, you know what you're going to be presented. You know Roman is going to be heavily featured on a segment. You know the Usos are going to do this. You know that Sasha and Charlotte are going to do this, and you add a couple of other minor components to it. And that's pretty much your episode. That is the formula every single week. So Bobby Lashley, not having to explain things, not having to do this, not having to, it's just put him out there, let him be what he's been. But now, you know, Omos gets into his face. Now he goes after Omos. Some of the heels get into his face. I even thought that they teased that a little bit with AJ Styles and Omos when they were having a little bit with Ziggler and Rude. I think they were kind of teasing, because remember, at some point earlier in the year, they were pushing AJ Styles and Omos in the direction of becoming baby faces. And then they backed into Randy Orton and Riddle. And that was a team that they did not expect to gel the way it did. When that caught fire, if anybody goes back, you'll see what I'm talking about. When Riddle and Orton caught fire, that's when WWE put the halt on AJ Styles and Omos completely as a possible baby faces, and they started really full-fledged heels, and that's where they have gone since. So we will see. The other match tonight was Damian Priest beating Apollo Crews, and as we said earlier, Damian Priest doing his best impression of the Hulk. I mean, again, as we said at the beginning of the show, Damian Priest, out of everybody on WWE's roster, has by far the most impressive record in 2021. I think that this probably crept up on people by surprise. No question, Damian Priest had a big run in 2021, but I think it was overshadowed a little bit with Bad Bunny. I think it was overshadowed a little bit when he was off of TV for a little while. He wasn't the focal point for about a month's time. And now you look at 2021, with the exception of the DQ recently, with the exception of that handicap match against Miz and Morrison, which he lost, the guy maybe has three or four losses the entire year. And in WWE, that is something you must take notice of. Doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure it out. When you look at their overall roster and you see Damian Priest have that much of a one-sided record, that means something very, very important as far as WWE creative and really, you know, who knows? Do you think Damian Priest could possibly become heavyweight champion in 2022?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In 2022? Yeah. I can see it. I can see that direction eventually going there. I mean, I'm not really excited of trying to take the belt off of Big E that fast, but
I don't think the eventual
lineup between Big E and Damian Priest is going to happen. I don't think anybody's going to sit there and disagree with that statement. You know, which side you pick is your own personal opinion, but Damian Priest, Big E, 2022 absolutely needs to happen.
I don't necessarily think that Damian Priest has to beat Big E, but I tell you, I know this is going to sound nuts right now. I get this vision, not psychic, but I get this, I close my eyes and I picture it. I picture Austin Theory possibly winning a heavyweight championship or a big title in 2022. Like, I could just picture it, totally unexpected, out of nowhere, maybe getting a little bit of help from the back. Like, he is, I don't know, just
stepping over people.
Man. Yeah, I think he's going to be someone that is going to win gold next year that people are going to be like, okay, I didn't see that coming. I don't know. For some reason, I got that vibe that could happen. We will see.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't look forward to that.
It's true.
Killed a kid. Yeah. That kid would just die.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's exactly what would happen. So you give Austin Theory the belt over Big E and Damian Priest and Seth and Kevin Owens and whoever else is in line for it. You know, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. So. Shout out to Johanu 23, much love, my friend. Want to also thank you to Crazy Cruiserweight. Spoilers tonight. I know there's only one on this match. Reggie of R-Truth and T-Bar over Akira Tozawa. That was your main event matches tonight. A little funny thing that I wrote on social media. I want to make this clear, you know, for those out there who claim to me that they work for WWE or AEW, I know some of you do. There's a few of you out there that I know you don't. And you're not impressing me by telling me you do or you don't. And there was one person who every week sends me a DM, hey, you know, I'm at Raw right now setting up the stage and this and that. And I know he's taking photos from other people online. So he sends me a DM tonight. You coming to Long Island for Raw? I said, no. I said, I got to work late. And I got to get through the show after. So he's like, oh, I'm at ringside. It's not full capacity, but it's a nice live crowd. Right. And we're about to do main event. So if you go online, everyone, and you go look at news sites, nobody had a result earlier for Reggie versus R-Truth. All they said was that Reggie and R-Truth had some in-ring action together. That's what everybody wrote. So I said, okay, I'm going to see if this guy truly is there or not. So I wrote to him and I said, hey, you're at ringside, right? And he responds like 2-3 minutes later. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm here. It's a good show. I said, who won between R-Truth and Reggie? And he puts question marks. So I wrote back. I said, you're at ringside. I said, they just had a match a few minutes ago. Who won? Fucking guy blocked me. Blocked me. So that just goes to show you. I mean, I wasn't trying to catch the guy, but, don't lie to me. Seriously, right. You're not impressing me. I mean, I just talk about petty, dumb little crap. So, all right, we're going to start wrapping this up in about 15 minutes or so. One thing that we wanted to talk about, a couple of things, actually. The first one, and I guess we could get the NXT out of the way now. Now, tomorrow in NXT, they have two ladder matches, and they're actually doing fan voting as far as who you want to represent each team, each member, because basically you have the men's war games, the women's war games, and tomorrow the ladder matches are going to determine who has the unfair advantage, and fans are picking the matches. Now, That's not what we're talking about tonight. What we're talking about tonight is Scotty Tuhati, Scott Garland, who is a trainer for NXT. He's not the only trainer there. He just gave his notice, and he gave his notice publicly. And he is leaving WWE with NXT. And, you know, the couple of sentences that he did say publicly, he said, you know, today I've asked for my release from World Wrestling Entertainment. 30 years ago, I stepped into a WWE ring for the very first time. I have lived my dream 100 times over. Some of my most special memories will always be from the last 5 years working with NXT. The black and gold brand was something special, and I am proud to have been a small part of that. I always promised myself that I would never be part of something solely for the paycheck, and that's where I was at. I told myself I would walk away if I ever got to that point, so that is what I have chosen to do. Coaching and producing the stars of NXT will always be a highlight of my life. I love you all more than you'll ever know. So basically, what is going on? And look, we're not going to analyze NXT tonight. We've already beat that to death. NXT is going back to their roots with developmental. But one thing that is definitely we should acknowledge and we really should pay attention to, not the business side of WWE, because we have already discussed that corporate side. You know, them, you know, removing a lot of their roster, they have learned they don't need to have 100 wrestlers to get away with these shows. They can do it with a much smaller crew. What's happening behind the scenes, it's not Triple H's legacy being destroyed or anything like that, but what is happening is that the NXT coaches are extremely frustrated right now. And without mentioning wrestlers' names and without mentioning other coaches' names, what the big frustration is behind the scenes, and some of this you'll say it's common sense, but what the frustration is that when you have wrestlers, coaches that are in NXT, their job is to help, obviously, build the stars of tomorrow, prep them, prepare them for the main roster. WWE does not make a lot of money off of NXT. They make chump change. So the NXT is the investment for the future. And what is happening in the case of Scotty Tuhati and some others there is they are putting a lot of time and energy in a particular wrestler or group of wrestlers. And right smack in the middle of all that investment, time, energy, and trying to build on a person, they get released. Okay, now we have to take our attention, and now we got to focus on these wrestlers. And then what happens? You start building them. You start trying to mold them, help them, teach them. And then right from underneath you, half of them get fired. So now a lot of the people that you're trying to groom, trying to teach, trying to mold, before you can even get halfway through, the roster keeps churning and it keeps switching. And a lot of the coaches are very frustrated because they're starting to invest in someone and then they get released. And it's like, all right, what do we do now? That's not fun to be a coach. If you're trying to mold, you know, okay, your job is to help this person, this person, this person, this person, and you're on your way and you're doing this and you're reviewing tapes and you're trying to study their promos, the in-ring work, psychology, offense, defense, reversals. And then as you're putting it together, they just get released out of nowhere. And that is what is going on behind the scenes for NXT. Because believe me when I tell you, this Triple H stuff is ridiculous, everyone. But if you don't have good trainers that are willing to go through what Nick Khan is doing and what Vince is doing and what they're doing with churning the NXT side of things, because usually when you get to the main roster, you're pretty much prepped. You're pretty much there. You pretty much, in WWE's eyes, you have made it, you know. But when you're in NXT and you're still a work in progress, if you don't have enough trainers helping build these stars of tomorrow, that is when NXT is dead. not Triple H, but the trainers and everybody behind the scenes that are trying to put this all together. What do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, me and Joey discussed that the other, you know, back on Thursday and stuff like that. And he was pretty much saying that, I guess that, you know, Scotty has a lot of other things going on in his life too, that might have also come to why he actually made this arrangement to leave. Because, I mean, let's be honest, leaving the company right before Christmas is a really weird time to do it to yourself. It's one thing when you're let go and, you know, before Christmas, and that's brutal. It's another thing if you're kind of leaving before Christmas too. So I'm not really sure if it's just the training and the events and stuff like that and watching all these kids leave and all the people in the company leave. But, you know, at the same time, it's just, you know, it is what it is. If he feels it's his time to leave, then what can we possibly say? I think there's more to the story that we don't know. And I don't think it's fair to speculate directly what it is. And I think that he'll come out probably sooner than later. And he'll probably come out sooner than later and talk about it. So I don't doubt that. But I don't think it's just as cut and dry as a lot of people thinks it is. So
okay. Another person who may be walking away from wrestling for good. And, you know, look, I have always been a fan of this person's work. And honestly, when I see, look, I have no issues with anybody out there who does not like this person as a wrestler, who thinks this person away from wrestling is a good thing. It's when you get the people that are online, they're like, good, fuck them. You know, good, get the fuck out. Don't ever fucking come back. You know, when it's that I kind of feel bad. Jax, who now has her name is Lena Fanin. Lena is part of her first name, which we, you know, we've talked about before. She talks about her name and she says, calm the fuck down, trolls. In all fairness, Opponent Crippler would be a solid front runner if she ever decided to wrestle again, but it's very highly unlikely. So basically, Nia Jax, Lena Fanin, is teasing that it is highly unlikely that she is ever going to return to the ring. I am still one of those that thinks that WWE may end up rehiring her. I really still believe that. But I think one thing we could all agree on, I think you'll agree also, she doesn't have an indie wrestling career. So it's like, it feels like WWE or nothing. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't seem like the person that would be willing to work in indie wrestling circuit. I think that she would do conventions. But do you think that Nia Jax's in-ring wrestling career is pretty much over?
I mean, I'm sure she could easily find a place if she's willing to take the pay cut. But I don't know. I don't know what her aspirations are. She was only in WWE, as a lot of people have guessed, as a favor to begin with, but then she grew to enjoy her time working within the company and enjoy the people that she was working with. And now that ride is over, and for better or worse, I think that, a lot of fans are okay with the prospect of Nia Jax not being in WWE. I think there was a lot of, and I don't think it's all just blatant trolling like she likes to throw out there. I think there was a genuine dislike from a lot of fans about, you know, Nia Jax, the character, and some of the things that she did in the ring. So if this is the end of her career, then it is what it is. And if not, you know, then hopefully she gets the training she needs, she so desperately needs, and hopefully she gets put in a position where she can learn from her mistakes and forbid, you know, actually become a very competent athlete. Because, you know, with her physical size, if she was as good as, let's say, a Kong, you know, she could have been amazing in WWE. But, you know, there was a lot of awkwardness within her movements. There was a lot of lack of care. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, her lack of care turned Becky Lynch into a superstar. So, I mean, she's notorious for that. And hopefully that's something that if she does decide or desire to go on the independent circuit, that gets beaten out of her. So,
yeah. I want to thank Crazy Cruiserweight for this super chat that he sent earlier. I don't know if he's going to like, you know, the answer that I'm going to give on this. I did a little research because Dynamite's rating is in from Wednesday. And this is why I don't do overnight ratings. Because the overnight rating and the overall rating are much different. And a lot of people were projecting horrible numbers for Dynamite, and they were way off and wrong. Dynamite, for the day before Thanksgiving, did 898,000 viewers. And Cruiserweight asked me to look up the cards for AEW 2019 and 2020, which were both the day before Thanksgiving. He said last year there was no NBA or NHL games the day before Thanksgiving because of COVID. And, you know, when he says the drinking at bars excuse has to stop, I think, you know, he is right in the sense of what some people make as far as excuses online. Now, what I did was I'll piggyback from it because Tony Khan posted a tweet earlier today. And Tony Khan was putting over the rating for Thanksgiving. And he said, thanks to you fans, last week was our biggest Thanksgiving Eve yet. In 2019, I'm not going to focus on the 18 to 49 stuff. It's ridiculous and it's asinine. And the reason why I tell you it's asinine is because the difference in that rating between 2019 and 2020 was only 5,000 viewers. The difference between 2020 and 2021 was only 70,000 viewers. So, you know, when you have CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole, and you look at all the additions that they have done over the last year, you're touting 70,000 more in a day before Thanksgiving. It's a very, very small number to be bragging about. But we'll look at the overall numbers, and we'll just summarize it. In 2019, they did 663,000 viewers the day before Thanksgiving. The week before, they had done 893. So they dropped over 200,000 viewers Thanksgiving week. But the following week, they jumped right back up to 851. The matches, and I tell you, they think this is more of a glaring concern for all of you out there that are fans of AEW. I'm going to explain why, and this will take me literally a minute, Mish. This is the card overall for AEW 2019. Best Friends over the Lucha Brothers. Bea Priestley and Emi Sakura over Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander. Cody over Matt Nix. Kenny Omega over Pac. MJF over Hangman Page to win the Diamond Ring. Jericho over Scorpio Sky to retain the AEW heavyweight title. Doesn't sound like much has changed in the last 2 years. Sure, we're not going to see some of those matches anymore, but doesn't feel like much has changed. Now, we go to 2020, which was last year. Last year, Thanksgiving Eve, they did 712,000 viewers. The week before, they did 850. The week after, they did 913. So they did better the week after Thanksgiving. Here's the big thing, though. Last year, the day before Thanksgiving, the big hook was the contract signing between Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley, because the following week, they were fighting each other for the AEW Heavyweight Championship. That was Thanksgiving, the week after of last year. Last year's card, Hangman Page over John Silver, Will Hobbs over Lee Johnson, the Hybrid 2 over Top Flight, the Inner Circle of Jake Hager and Chris Jericho over Frankie Kazarian and Christopher Daniels, Hikaru Shida over Anna Jay, the Butcher and the Blade over Pac and Rey Fénix, and in the contract signing. Not much changed in 1 year. If you really look at it, it feels like the same vibe. So the ratings this year, them doing 898, last week they did 984. So they only dropped 90,000 viewers. So they dropped less than I think what a lot of people expected. Next week is going to be the interesting rating because, you know, 898, you feel like they got to do 980, 990, a million next week if you follow the trend. But if you notice, the big difference is next week we don't have the big heavyweight title match. And look, a lot of people the last couple of days were saying that Bryan Danielson was taking on Daniel Garcia on Dynamite.
Bullshit detected. Take precautions.
Bryan Danielson is only fighting the Dark Order pretty much until January. So I don't know why anybody thought that. I think this week Bryan Danielson is taking on Allen Angels. Nothing against Allen Angels. That's not something that I'm going to stop what I'm doing on a Wednesday night and watch. So hopefully that helped a little bit. So with that said, we're going to start taking this home. You want me to read the lineup for NWA Hard Times 2?
Sure, let's go for it.
That is taking place Saturday, December 4th on Fight TV from Atlanta, Georgia. And after I read this card, I want to ask you why you have kind of fallen out of favor with NWA in recent months. Because a lot of people that tune into these shows have also said, you know, I don't really follow NWA like I used to. I'm going to read everybody the lineup. By the way, Mick Foley is supposed to appear, make a special appearance. You have for the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship gauntlet match, Alex Taylor versus Arya Daivari versus C.W. Anderson, Darius Lockhart, Homicide, Jeremiah Plunkett, Jamie Stanley, Kerry Morton, Luke Hawks, P.J. Hawks, Sal Renaro, and Victor Benjamin. That is for the junior heavyweight title. For the NWA heavyweight... What?
I was going to say, that's a good lineup. There's a few good stars in there. I like C.W. Anderson. I like Homicide. I mean, there's a few people in there.
Yeah.
Go on.
For the NWA Heavyweight Championship, Trevor Murdoch versus Mike Knox.
Yeah.
Okay. Tyrus with Austin Idol in his corner over Scion, and is a no DQ match for the TV title with the Pope as a special guest referee.
That'll be a meaty match. Be a lot of thick clubbing going on there.
Okay. La Rebellion, which is Bestias 666 and Mecha Wolf 450. They are defending the NWA Tag Team Championships against the End, which is Odinson and Paro, I believe. For the NWA Women's Championship, Camille versus Melina.
Yeah.
For the national title, Chris Adonis versus Judas with Father James Mitchell in his corner.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be good, too. Yeah. I love Adonis. I love Masters. He's a good guy.
Three-way tag match for the women's tag titles. Allison Kay and Marty Bell defending the belts against Kylie Rae and Tootie Lynn, along with Lady Frost and Natalia Markova. For the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett defend the titles against Aaron Stevens and J.R. Kratos. For the NWA Junior Heavyweight Championship, Austin Aries versus Red Titus. Nick Aldis.
It's not bad. Like, there are names on there that people will recognize, even if they don't recognize the names. They'll know these people from WWE or from ROH and other companies. It's not like we're talking about a weak card. Overall, it's not a bad card. I think the only match I've heard so far that I'm not a big fan of is the women's tag match, but everything else sounds pretty good. So keep going. Sorry.
Colby Carino versus Doug Williams.
Oh, Steve Carino's kiddo. Yeah. Okay.
Jax Dane versus Matt Mims.
Okay.
Mickie James versus Masha Slamovic.
Okay.
And Nick Aldis versus Tom Latimer. I see Slamovic. Yeah. Aldis versus Tom Latimer. If either man is disqualified, they're suspended for 8 weeks. 13 matches, Mick Foley making an appearance. Sounds like a stacked card. Why the disconnect over the last bunch of months with NWA? Does this stem from the women's pay-per-view?
No, I think that there was something that they lost pre-COVID, man. And I mean, I don't need to hash that out, but there was a personality that the NWA had when they were doing Power on television or on YouTube. You know, there was a little bit more of I don't know, character. It felt more fun to watch it. The whole studio feel was good. Like, I know that they brought some of that back, but I don't know, man. There's something missing there. And I mean, honestly, I don't want to put my finger on that because it opens up a whole different kind of door that we don't want to talk about. But their loss of certain people within that company has changed the direction of what it is. It is a fine wrestling show. It really is. It is a good wrestling show. It is a good card. There's nothing wrong with the card. It is structurally sound, but it is missing the personality that it once had. I'm sorry. Yeah, I love Nick Aldis to death, and Mickie James seems to be doing a good job with the women's division, but they don't have the personality that the NWA had back in 2019.
Okay. I'm curious what you all, you know, that actually are invested or were invested in NWA. Why have you fallen out of favor with it?
I still subscribe, by the way. Let me put this out there. I still subscribe. I still support the company. I still support Billy. I still support the idea of this being an alternative to what we see on television. I like the wrestlers. I like the players in there. I've just fallen out of it. I don't, it's not must see TV anymore, even though it's fight TV, I guess. So, but it's not must see TV anymore. Now I'll absolutely watch the pay-per-view. Of course, I'll watch the events. I'll pick those up and stuff like that. It's just overall, there's something missing. There's a little bit of heart and soul that was lost there.
Yeah. So I tell you, for me, I'm not blaming it on the women's pay-per-view. But I think that created a picture. And, you know, I don't want to rehash everything, but if people remember, one of the things that caught my eye with that all-women's pay-per-view is that Mickie James, and it's not her fault, I'm not putting any blame on her, but when she was saying, you know, we're listening, and there were some very, very talented women. And sure, you can't bring in every single person. But there were some very, very talented women that never got that opportunity, that were not only speaking loud, but yelling loud. And, you know, their resumes spoke for themselves. And it seemed like there was a specific group of people that they had all intentions on bringing in. It didn't really divert away from that. And there were a lot of names notably missing. There were a lot of names that didn't even really reach out on social media. And that pay-per-view felt more like hype than anything else. And again, I'm not putting any of that blame on Mickie James at all, because she worked her freaking ass off and she did everything that she possibly could. Sure, but at the end of the day, it just feels, you know, you get an extra couple of names here and there, but it just feels like it was more of a hype than anything else. You know, it's hard to explain. I'm just saying this in the fans' point of view. You know, it just feels like something, I don't want to say was insincere about it, but there was just something that felt way too manufactured about it. You know?
For Mickie to have had her moment to fix right all the things that she accused of WWE not giving her the chance to do, manufactured, I don't think is the right word, but it felt very nearsighted. I don't know if that's because of a financial commitment or a financial cap in some way that she couldn't do what she needed to do, but I felt like for a woman who's been a part of the indies, who's been a part of wrestling for as long as she has, for some of the people that she's wrestled, and don't get me wrong, she just had that great match with Mercedes and stuff like that. But I mean, with all the different people that she's had connections to over the years, I was very surprised to see that the card was a lot more youth oriented, was a lot more based around the up and comers of tomorrow, as opposed to establishing a lot of the people that she's wrestled with along the years. And even girls that are no longer a part of the business, I was very surprised to not see some of them there. So,
yeah. Before we go, I want to shout out Roger Rubio. Yes, everyone. You know, if you on the way out could hit that like button. I know we asked earlier, and about 40 to 50 of you stepped up. So if you haven't done so already, we would very much appreciate that. Thank you, Roger, for reminding everyone. Joe Punches, serious question from Joe, Mitch. It takes time to be seasoned. AJ Styles, Sheamus, Randy Orton have some of their best years. Shouldn't women be allowed that time to beyond the age of 30?
Yes. Women absolutely are in the same, especially in any kind of business. It's a weird question when people sit there and say, all we need is 20-year-olds. Let's throw as many teenagers out in wrestling as we possibly can because guys like to watch teenage girls, right? But, I mean, wrestling fans as a whole appreciate more things than just aesthetics. So, yeah Joe, totally 100% right. I think that older women deserve a little love, too. I think there's something to be said about more talents and wisdom and experience coming through age. And there's a reason why women, even in 2021, like Mickey James and Gail Kim and others, are still in demand because they've learned over the years. They've given us great moments over the years, and they've gotten better over the years. They've cut better promos. For the most part, if they are constantly learning their craft, by 40, a woman or even a man or anyone is much better than they were when they were 30.
Well, that's what
they continue their craft.
What I was going to say. If his comment said 35 or 40, I would agree with it completely. But the thing is, there are a lot of women that are featured on TV right now that are over the age of 30. I think some people forget the age of some of the women on television. We've had some women who, you know, are still looked at as very young, who have been on TV for 6-7 years already. You know, I think people would be surprised how many women that they watch on television that are above the age of 30 already. So I think this is more for someone who maybe is 35 or 40, because it's pretty obvious once you get to that age bracket, it's not that you're not featured, you know, like you used to, but more times than not, you're featured in a negative way. You know, like the storyline usually features that person.
But that's more based upon creative. That's silly.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too, is women are pigeonholed in probably a tenth of the amount of gimmicks that men have. And this isn't like a, you know, women deserve equality thing, but there are so many more gimmicks and ideas and storylines for women that have never been explored, never even been attempted, because creative just doesn't see it that way. Creative doesn't want to play that role, you know, and I'll never understand that a lot of women's storylines have to do with their physical bodies, have to do with their sexuality. And it's funny to me, because it's like, instead of that being something that you could put on top of the same kind of storylines that men have, it's almost like they're just pigeonholed to a lot of storylines and gimmicks based around that.
Yeah. Who's the girl in NXT that there was some controversy last week because she cut a promo and she said, "Daddy's little girl." What the hell is her name? Somebody in the chat room posted, because somebody DM'd me earlier about it, wanted my thoughts. And then right before the show started, someone else DM'd me and said, "Oh, what do you think about them dropping a Daddy's Little Girl thing?" I want to mention her name because I think
I saw it, and I'm totally blanking on it.
Chat room, what's her name? She's got blonde hair and they're doing the Daddy's Little, she mentioned Daddy's Little Girl in her NXT promo. And then there were websites claiming, Tiffany Stratton, thank you. I want to make this clear. The men, especially, the men that are the loudest, the most vocal, mentioning the Daddy's Little Girl comment in a negative light. Now, I'm not talking about people who DM me. They were just curious right. as far as what's going on. But for people, high-profile people, the guys out there especially that are the loudest, making the most noise, turning this into an issue, are the ones that are the most fascinated with it. A lot of people forget that WWE's biggest demographic was over the age of 50. And what do a lot of older men fantasize? Younger women. I'm talking, you know, obviously not everybody's heterosexual, but that is a stereotype playing into it. You mean, you know, I see people sending me screenshots of stuff with OnlyFans, and, you know, there's a lot of women wrestlers that have OnlyFans. It's not just Sonny. And if you look at a lot of these screenshots, what word do they use nonstop on OnlyFans? Daddy. 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 Oh, daddy, do you like, what do you see? Daddy, daddy, daddy. That's a phrase. That's playing off of fantasy and a lot of reality. So the people making the most noise are the ones that love it the most. But they got to play the opposite to come off as this higher than thou, you know, image. But they're the ones that love it more than anybody else. So, wow, we got Tiffany Stratton into the show. That definitely deserves a little bit of a little timestamp later. So anyway, we're done for tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us. If you're around tomorrow night and you're part of our Patreon family, Mish and I are going to be doing Breakfast Soup VI Patreon. Yeah. We'll give an update on the cereal tournament. We'll talk a little NXT. I am going to watch NXT tomorrow because I want to see the ladder matches. And I'm kind of interested in War Games more than I think a lot of others out there. If you're not part of our Patreon family, Wednesday I'll be up here for Wednesday Night Dynamite. We'll recap Dynamite. We'll recap NXT. We'll do predictions for War Games. And Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Mish, Joey Numbers, Wrestling Soup. You could tune into that. And you can get that from WrestlingSoup.com, Discord. You know, if you need links, I'll be more than happy to supply them as well. And, Mish, I think we're out of here.
Awesome. A good show, man.
Yeah. Fun. I told you we go about 90, 10 minutes over, but, you know, it's, we're reaching the ballpark. We're reaching it.
Hope everybody enjoyed the show. Hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. I look forward to talking to you guys soon. So
much love.
Much love. See you tomorrow, guys.
Take care. Be well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everyone, I'm a little jealous that Mish lives in Chicago because it's not even midnight yet where he's at. So for me, though, it is almost 1 a.m. over here. So I'm going to jet out of here, get this show online ASAP so I could go to sleep ASAP. But I want to thank you, as always, for your support. And for the third and last time tonight on the way out, if you wouldn't mind, if you enjoyed the show, hit that like button. You'd be surprised how much that helps us, because the more people do that, you know, the more that tells YouTube, hey, we like the show. Let me recommend it to some of the haters out there. I can only imagine what their feeds look like. Like, this show showing up on my feed for. So I thank you as always for your support. And by the way, don't forget, look at, see over there in the lower right-hand corner, Blue Wire, bluewirepods.com. I am on the network, and as I mentioned right before Thanksgiving, in 11 days, we hit 100,000 downloads on Blue Wire. It took 11 days. I expected that to take 2 months. We got to 100,000 in 11 days. It is a number that I couldn't even envision to get that quickly, because I know a lot of you out there have not updated bookmarks, but this is what happens when we start condensing and making the shows available in only a couple of special spots. iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, you know, you name it. Audible, Google Play, playlist or podcasts. So I can't thank you enough for the support. And check out the channel. Check out BlueWirePods.com. If you haven't checked it out yet, if there's any reason to check it out, just go there and click the wrestling section. And look at yours truly. And look at the company that I'm in. I will even admit, it looks almost humorous to be around that elite company. And I know Chavo Guerrero Jr. has been getting a lot of heat lately for the comments related to Rollins with that situation last week. But when you see the other shows, because there's only six of them, when you see the other wrestling shows that I am now a part of in that network, I guarantee you that when they go on their channel to update for the week and they look, and I guarantee you some of them are like, the hell they signed this guy for? So we want to, in all fun, competition, I want to blow those shows out of the water. I want us to be higher than them. So when they go on, they're like, how is this son of a bitch getting more viewers and downloads, listeners, than us? That's what I want. So, Nero Fay, much love, my friend. He says, good news, they caught it early. He'll finish soon. Yes, my friend, we talked about it yesterday. I'm glad you're feeling better. You know, just enjoy wrestling. Enjoy the things that keep your mind off of the negatives. For those yesterday, I did not have my stress test today. It's been postponed until Thursday at 1:45 p.m. I will definitely shoot a couple of seconds of video in the room right before I walk the treadmill and pass out like a goof because I am so out of shape. And then Thursday night for the Q&A, I'll probably share it with everyone. So, and yes, yesterday we had cinnamon rolls and my mom make a run-in, which was unexpected. But I had a fun show last night. Fun show. Great conversation. And I hope you check it out. You know, I put a very detailed list synopsis of what we got into for the most part. And it's definitely worth the listen. So before I go, there was one final message from Botch Club on Instagram. Don't be a fart, Mark. Follow the Wrestle Daily and Botch Club now. So, hey, he paid for the advertising. The least I can do is at least plug the Botch Club on Instagram. Wrestle Daily, go check it out. Everyone, I want to thank you again for hanging out with us tonight. You all have a great night. Post your feedback in the comment section. Yesterday on the ferry, I responded between 300 and 400 comments. I responded to so many, and I have more that I have to do. But I spent about 90 minutes yesterday just responding. So I'm curious, you know, what your thoughts on Raw tonight was. What do you think about The Miz and Edge going at it? I know a lot of people were fantasizing maybe a different opponent for Edge, but I got no problem. I got no problem with it. You know, not every match makes sense. AJ Styles is with Omos right now. So why would you have AJ Styles feud with Edge one-on-one? If Edge feuds with Damian Priest is not dropping that title anytime soon. So what are you going to set it up for Edge to fail? This, in this case, Miz doesn't need championships. Miz doesn't need victories. Neither does Edge. But I think this ultimately leads... I do believe Miz versus Edge will be a one-on-one match, but Maryse is the wild card. The fact that she was in that ring tonight, I could almost bet the ranch that in addition to the Miz versus Edge, I think we will get Miz and Maryse versus Edge and Beth Phoenix. I think that is a match that they are seriously considering. And you know what? It'll probably be more of a comedy match than anything else, but... you know, it's an interesting dynamic watching Edge and Beth Phoenix as a tag team. You know, that's something I don't think we would have expected. So it's a little different. It's a little different. All right, everybody. I'm out of here. Have a great night, my friends. All the best. And I'll see you either tomorrow on Patreon or Wednesday after AEW Dynamite. Have a good night, everybody.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the host. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.